Okay, I think this is really doing a lot for the image of the Institute of Medicine as being, you know, like out there where the action is, as opposed to an ivory tower institution. This report that I'm going to talk about next is along the same lines, actually. When we were working on this report, when Eduardo and his committee were developing the local governments report, so they had to take the best available evidence and package it to say, we may not have perfect evidence, but here are things that you could put your money on, because there is a type of evidence that supports trying them, and then, you know, evaluate them and see how they're doing. This report on the framework to inform decision making was to really try to get ahead of the problem of evidence. And so I'll go through it and explain why it was conducted. It was funded, I didn't see if I can get that back up. It was funded by Kaiser Permanente Oakland, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and the CDC, who felt that a report, proactive report on evidence was really needed. And at least there's at least one other member of the committee is here, Larry Green. So the study was conducted because of the urgent need for action on the obesity epidemic. And the understanding that we needed to change the landscape to be less obesity promoting, that it wasn't just a matter of individual behavior. There was a lot of agreement that the decisions and actions should draw on evidence, that you couldn't just go off and try anything, you know, resources are at stake, what if you cause harm, so there should be some basis in evidence for taking action. But unfortunately, the evidence that we've been generating is poorly aligned with the need for evidence about environmental and policy change, really a lot of evidence on obesity treatment, a lot of evidence about individual behavior, but not much evidence about environmental and policy change. So there was this tension between the sense we have to do something tomorrow, and there's a little bit of evidence there, and what evidence there is hasn't necessarily even been pulled together. So we were looking at the need to make better use, appropriate use of what's available, but also recognize that the whole evidence base was inadequate, and see what we could do to give guidance for generating new evidence. I'll also say that this was not a new problem. In 2005, the Institute of Medicine created a book called Childhood Obesity Prevention, Health and the Balance, which was an national action plan. That report was commissioned by CDC. And at the time, there was recognition that the whole question of evidence for obesity prevention was different, that you weren't going to the therapeutic trials, that you had to think creatively and go more to public health approaches. And so this report that was commissioned to do the framework was really catching up with that particular aspect of the problem. So the study charge was to develop a framework for evidence-informed decision-making in obesity prevention efforts that focus on approaches for addressing policy and community-level interventions to influence food and physical activity environments. Here's the membership of the committee. You'll see some names that you know from APHA. We had two policymakers, who elected policymakers. Bill Purcell is now at Harvard, but he had been the mayor of Nashville, Tennessee. And also Leticia Van Depute, who's an active Texas state senator. And then we had Adolfo, or Fito as he's called, Valadez from the Texas Department of State Health Services, making policy within the State Health Department context. We had some of the usual suspects for evidence, you know, some epidemiologists, a former journal editor, and an economist, someone who's an expert in systems. So the primary audience of this report were the end users, decision makers, and the people who assist decision makers. So we looked at evidence questions in terms of how we could create evidence that that users could really could benefit from, and then secondarily researchers to say, how can you generate evidence that users can have? And then these are the people who control and inform those primary users, people who fund research, journal editors, government agencies, foundations, professional organizations, and academic institutions and educators. So one of the key elements of this report was a review of the state of the science. What does obesity prevention evidence look like? And we had our hunches. They were in the motivation for the report. people had the idea obesity prevention doesn't work. When you do big community trials, nothing works. You can't try it. It's, you know, it's a hopeless problem. And some of that feeling came from systematic reviews. So you take this tool called systematic review that's intended to take the best of the best evidence, sift it down, get the perfect studies, and then look across those studies to see what happened. So we looked at reviews from the past 13 years or so, over the time the epidemic had been most recognized. And we included meta-analyses, systematic reviews, and other types of reviews, guidelines, task force recommendations, and so forth. And by now you've noticed the numbers at the bottom of the page. It's what I call the cutting room floor problem. So initially identified were up to 13,000 and some studies that somehow had a tag that said obesity prevention. And the ones that ended up being eligible were 158 in the one that was the most inclusive. So there's a problem. People think they're generating evidence about obesity prevention, but even the people who review evidence don't think that's evidence about obesity prevention. So we came to some conclusions about the state of the evidence. Basically, overall, that it lacks the power to set a clear direction for obesity prevention across a range of populations. And it implies that there's a lack of effectiveness when what it really is a lack of evidence about effectiveness. And some of the specifics, the conceptual framework for evidence selection, every author, every reviewer making up their own version of it, a very narrow focus and a failure to attend to the fact that these determinants of obesity, these social determinants and environmental determinants are all in a causal web. It's not like one thing is going to change. And some of these reviews would look at one specific intervention. Anything that you couldn't sort out pieces would not be included. We didn't have another big problem, no details on what happened with the intervention. You know, it's the cut it down to 3,000 pages, editors, 3,000 words, editors, instructions if you want to publish in the journal. External validity was not there, lack of relevance to the real world, and in fact, the main criterion for inclusion is usually internal validity in your comparison groups, and so you get a perfect study that doesn't apply to anybody you've ever met or will ever meet or any community you'll ever live in, but it's a great study. So generalizability had not been prioritized, and then this problem of testing single interventions, which is almost sure to find that it's not going to work because we know we need a combination of things to work. So this is what we came up with. We gave it the acronym LEAD for locate, evaluate, and assemble evidence and inform decisions. It's framed in a systems perspective and opportunities to generate evidence. So what this framework is, it's really guidelines for using evidence, taking the basic evidence use process of looking for things, evaluating them, and then kind of synthesizing them in some way. But what's different is the way we're directing people to go through these steps. This is not a decision-making algorithm. There's some people, I think, who signed on when we released this in April and thought they were going to get a cookbook, you know, do A, B, plus C, and stir, and you'll get obesity prevention. This is really not that. This is how policymakers or decision makers can take what's there and use it as a part of their decision, which is going to be influenced by many, many other things. So the systems perspective, which we prioritized, a principle there is each aspect of decision making and research should be approached with appreciation of the complex content of the many factors that influence obesity. So embrace complexity. Yes, it's hard. It's easy to do one little linear thing, but that's not the way the world is organized. For specifying questions, which we gave a lot of priority to, identify the question that needs to be answered for a decision, and then identify the evidence that's useful for that decision, and I'll explain that more in a minute, and then evaluate the evidence appropriate to the type of evidence. So if you have a qualitative study, don't evaluate it as if it should have been a trial. You know, if you have a quasi-experimental design, don't rule it out because you didn't randomize people, you know, to live in one part of Louisville versus another. There's still a way that you can evaluate that design to see if it meets the standards of integrity for quasi-experiment. And then what do you do with it when you have it? You assemble evidence and inform decisions. We have a recommendation there for a transparent summary. So tell people what you did. No, you didn't have perfect evidence. You didn't have traditional evidence. You didn't have all the evidence, but this is what I had. This is where I used evidence. This is where I incorporated local wisdom or judgment, and this is how I came to the decision. And then finally, look for opportunities to generate evidence every step of the way, and that includes evaluating practice, the practice-based evidence that Larry Green has talked about so much. Evaluate everything you do. You put a policy in place because the mayor's daughter was gaining too much weight and he could get that policy through. That's the way a lot of it happens. But then find out what happens after you put that policy in place and use that to generate evidence. I talked about asking questions. We went to the evidence-based public health, the different types of questions, and this is to say this is not new and it's applicable to other areas of public health. And we tried to emphasize asking questions about why you should do something, what specifically you should do, and how you should do it. Example, why should we do something about this in our situation? The answer is not simply because there's an obesity epidemic. People in localities, policymakers, decision makers, they need to have very specific reasons to do something here. So we laid out the kinds of questions and answers that people might want to talk to justify the why, and that also becomes the baseline for evaluating whether what you've done down the line has changed, has that why changed. So the health burden, determinants, disparities, you can see the types of evidence you'd want there. Then this is the part that really is where people get stuck. So what specifically should we do about this problem? What intervention should we try? Here we emphasize, you see the first line, intervention theory or logic. You know, in biological science, biomedical science, people are big on mechanisms. But we're not as big on mechanisms in public health. We have our logic models, but a lot of these interventions, usually menu labeling, school BMI screening, how is it that we think it's going to work? Is it going to raise awareness? Is it actually going to cause the child to go to treatment? What's the menu labeling going to do? Is it going to change, keep people out of the restaurant? Is it going to bring them in the restaurant so they can see what they're choosing? So first have a theory that it should work in some way and know what it's supposed to do, be able to measure and assess the causal pathways, make sure that this is going to lead to the outcomes that you're looking for, and then also look in a systems perspective at potential unintended consequences, positive or negative, associated with that intervention. And that's helping to guide in selecting interventions. This may be the most important question once you have some things that you want to try, and this is the information that's not in the literature. How would I do this? If I wanted to do this, how would I do it? So you know an intervention was done, but you don't have enough details to see what you would have to do to adapt it to your particular locality or your situation. Some of the things you'd want to know there are how generalizable is this likely to be, what's the cost-benefit ratio, what are some of the priorities in your community, and would this intervention fit with your community priorities, and what are some of the challenges. So we're trying to give people guidance for gathering information and journal editors and researchers guidance for the type of information they need to tell us. If in an appendix on the website, that's fine, but tell us about that intervention so that we can decide whether to replicate it. So I have a paraphrased version of the report recommendations, which in their formal sense are kind of IOM paragraphs with a lot of clauses. But the essence of the recommendations are here. So we're saying for people who want to use evidence to act differently with respect to how they're looking for evidence, viewing it, evaluating it, and compiling it. We did not propose any evidence hierarchy because there's so many different types of evidence you need and different ways to use it and evaluate it. Act differently with how you generate and report evidence. For funders, fund differently, fund things that can tell you something that might be helpful in solving a problem. You know, you heard Bill Jenkins say, well, you put people before papers. This is part of the same thing. You know, let's generate evidence that's useful. Hopefully it will help your career if people listen, but also it will help your community. Train differently so that researchers know how to do this and know other methods, and publish differently so that people can find the information. So the fundamental questions addressed in this framework were how can the evidence that's currently available and potentially relevant be identified, evaluated, and compiled in ways that are useful, and how can we develop more evidence that's of high quality and framed to be directly relevant to decision-making on obesity prevention. This is kind of my summary of what I think are the unique contributions of this report, which is 500 and some pages, so it's like a reference book. It gives a comprehensive look at what we can do differently with evidence. So people have called for a different standards, but this is actually a how-to, and we have a lot of resources in the appendix, which I'll mention in a minute. So it describes how to do this, and it gives a justification for why doing things differently is both valid and necessary. This is not an apology for bad evidence. This is a strong justification that there are good ways to get information that are valid and rigorous, that are less traditional than the typical biomedical approach, and it gives us that language that people can use. And then it has links in the appendices. We have our glossary. We have a table of other evidence projects, the community guide, and some of the other resources for thinking about evidence. We have a review of the existing reviews that tells you the details of those reviews that left most of the work on the cutting room floor. There's a fairly long listing of appendices for locating evidence on the web, in journal search engines you've probably never heard of. I had certainly never heard of many of them, for locating government reports, all kinds of things that you can use for evidence. We have one for researchers, which is a little primer or an example of study designs other than RCTs, how you implement them. We had experts in education and evaluation methodology who help with that, so you could, you know, kind of see, is this a method that I could use, or I could show it to my statistician and they could help me use this method instead of just feeling like I have no options. And then we have the agendas for our two workshops, one on what evidence is needed and one on systems thinking. And they and the workshop slides and presentations are archived on the web. So if you put in evidence framework obesity at iom.edu, you can probably find a page for this and look at some of these resources if you would like. So Fito Valadez, and if I wake my computer up, I'm going to tell you who he is. So, as I said, he's a member of this, let me start this up.